welcome to Cook and Conquer, the show where the kitchen becomes a place of healing, connection, transformation. I'm your host, Anna Levi-Scar Vineyard, and today's episode is one that speaks directly to the heart. My guest, Jose Pereira, is a former CEO and resilience teacher and a survivor of 1,775 days as an international hostage. Through faith, discipline, and an unwavering will to live, Jose not only survived the unimaginable, he actually has a mission to help others reclaim strength, meaning, and emotional wholeness. His story today, in his book, From Hero to Villain, has impacted leaders and families worldwide. And today, we begin with something deeply human, healing emotional wounds through connection, whether through conversation, community, or even preparing a meal. Connection is often the bridge back to ourselves. Jose, welcome to the show. Let's begin by setting the stage for this conversation about connection. Keeps us alive in even the darkest moments. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me here, Anthony. It's an honor.
It is an honor to have you here. And as you know, we have a special connection, right? Many people watching have lived through silent battles, trauma, loss, loneliness. When pain isolates us, connection becomes one of the hardest things to reach for. This segment will help us as viewers to understand how healing often begins with simple letting someone guide us. During captivity, what helped you stay emotionally alive, even when physically you were actually alone?
Before answering that, I want to introduce a little bit the situation, because maybe your audience are not familiar with our story. I was a former oil and gas worker that became the CEO of the company, the Citgo Petroleum, here in the U.S. Citgo Petroleum is the sixth biggest refinery here in the U.S. And for me, it was a kind of a big deal that being an immigrant, I became the CEO of the company. But that happened during 2017, during the first administration of Trump. And they were having issues with the Venezuelan government, same situation that's happening today. And we were called to go to a business trip to make a presentation in Venezuela. And it became an ambush, and we became a hostage. And that situation lasted for us 5 years. So answer your question, during those 5 years, how the healing came, how we can survive that situation, it's a very complex answer, because it was not something that only in one step. It came through several phases. I always mention that this came through several phases. Because the first year, we were six guys, because I was not alone. I was with my five vice president. So we were six guys, but we were separated and isolated. So my first year was in solitary confinement. It was not easy. It was not easy, because my first impression was that I was there. I was accused to be an American spy in a communist regime. So you really are beginning to think that you're going to stay there forever. So my first thoughts were not so good. You know, your mind is all over the place. But here comes the turning point, that after around 10 months, I had the blessing that I got the visit of my wife. So my wife came, she took the risk, and she came to visit me after 10 months. So one day, I'm there, I have lost the sense of the time, and one day they opened the door and said, dress up that you're going to have a visit. And they put me in a room, and when I'm waiting, I didn't know who was going to come. So when they opened the door, was my wife.
Aww.
So when I saw her, I was scared, but at the same time, I was, you know, emotional, because I saw her after 10 months. So my first reaction was, what are you doing here? So I was really scared. And she told me that she came under a secure, environment that they approved her visit. And that was the first time that I knew that they were working hard to bring us back. And then they were having a negotiation to regather our release. And she and the other five families were working very hard. So that gave me something that is called the hope.
The hope.
The hope.
Wow. You know,
it comes the hope. So now after, it was like a 3-hour visit. But when I returned to my prison cell, I was full of hope. And that was really the turning point. So the answer here is that in any situation that you're going in life, the hope is very important. Because when you lose hope is when everything is gone. So here, the hope has a real importance here.
Yes, and what comes to my mind, I didn't even know that you guys were, with the whole group that went there, how many were you all, five, six?
Six.
And you all were separated.
Separated.
I always thought that you were all in the same confinement, you were all in the same place.
No, my first year, I stayed in a place that they called the submarine. It was a vessel without no windows, without no fresh air, no running water, and the door locked all the day long, and the lights 24/7 turned on. So it was really like living in a hell. And I didn't know where the other guys were. I saw them after 1 year. So no clue where they were. After 1 year, now I'm full of hope. In around 10 months, they opened the door, because they always did it that way. They never told you what was going on. Always was a surprise. So maybe 2 months after, they open one day the door and say, dress up, that you're going to have another visit. And when I'm there, they come two guys, a lady and a gentleman, and they introduce themselves. They were from the UN. So it was the arbitrary commission of the UN that flew to Venezuela to negotiate a release. I found that day that the situation was so tense between the U.S. and Venezuela that the two ambassadors were recalled.
Wow.
So no ambassador. Until today, there's no ambassador. The ambassador that was at that time was a guy called James Story, that he was expelled from Venezuela and he moved to Colombia. By the way, my son that is here, he was who had the contact with him. He was my liaison. From Colombia, he handled all our situation. So the point is that after 1 year, they began to negotiate that release. They could not do it, but they found to put us together. So there's another turning point. When I saw these guys after 1 year, we hugged ourselves. We knew that we were alive.
Wow.
Everybody was in very bad condition. I already had lost 100 pounds at that time. The other guy were like skeletons, you know. We saw these guys like those images that you see in the concentration camps, in the Nazi concentration camp.
No.
Like that. Yes,
yes,
like that. So everybody was in very bad shape, but now we are together.
What would you tell people that have lost hope? You just mentioned right now, hope is something you just cannot let go. You have to hold on to hope.
Yeah.
Because if you lose hope, you actually lose everything.
Yes.
So what would you tell people? Because there might be people just right now that are experiencing the same experience that you went through. Maybe they're in other form of captivity. Mm-hmm, we don't know. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people that are being trafficked. There's so many things of layers. What would you tell them? If they're going to listen to this, your desire is to help people. I know you have, I know your heart of helping people, mainly immigrants, because as you know, we're Hispanic and we care about our culture.
Yeah.
We care about our people. What would you tell them if they've lost hope?
Well, this is very important, because something that you can never, never lose is the hope. Even in the darkest moment, because there comes the spiritual part of this, that when you really are in the darkest moment, God never abandons you. Even you think so, he will never abandon you. And that's something that for me was a discovery, that God never abandoned us. Mm-hmm. And when you feel that God is with you, and even if you're in that worst situation in your life, And you said that you don't have to have gone through this situation, but you can be going to any situation in your life. Yes. But when you really get stick to that God is with you and you don't lose hope, that will change your mindset. That will make the things different. And of course, after we got the six together, it came something miracle, because we found that the six of us, we were not friends. We were not friends. I didn't know these guys. We were colleagues. I didn't know their story. So now we are six guys that we discovered that six of us had more than 30 years married, all of us.
Wow.
With families, kids, and grandkids. So it was a lot of connection that we found. Yes. And that gave us much more of hope, because now we have to work hard to come back for our families.
Yes.
So that was a real turning point for
us. Wow. That is very impressive that you all had the same time.
Yes.
You were there for the same reason. How important were relationships in your healing once you were finally free?
Oh, well, this is something important, because we could come back because of our families. I'm here because of my family. And the six family work hard to bring us back. Our kids, the six of us has wonderful kids. And the six family, the kids were really, really big part of this.
Please don't go away. We will be coming back with more of this very impactful story with Jose Pereira. Thank you. Coming back and staying with us with this amazing, amazing, and powerful segment. How can preparing or sharing food with others help break emotional walls and create connection?
Okay, the food for us in our captivity was a real key player. Let me tell you why. As I explained in the segment, the first year that we were in solitary confinement, we were starving. Starving. I stayed days without eating. Why? Because if you go to that timeline, that happened in 2017, 1 year after it was 2018. The people that know the case of Venezuela, 2018 was one of the worst years ever in Venezuela, because there were a lot of sanctions. So the country didn't have neither food, neither medicine. So we were suffering, but we didn't have neither food, neither medicine. That's why I lost 100 pounds. So when the UN came and intervened and negotiated to get us together, one of the things that they authorized is our family begin to bring us food. Our family had to bring us food. It was a very complicated logistic, because picture this, six families here in the US trying to send food to Venezuela during sanctions. Was really difficult. So what my family particularly did is that my wife took the decision that my eldest son, who is here, young, he moved to Colombia, and from Colombia he began to buy food and send to Venezuela. And somebody picked up the food and they begin to cook me. And that is where the food began to play a key role, because the person that was cooking to me did it. Every 3 days, they send me in some cans that cooked food. But the food for me was not food, was the love of my family. Every time I saw the food, the person that prepared the food did it so beautifully. You know, tried to do the food in a way that was like coming from a restaurant.
Wow.
And when I saw that food, I saw the love of my family. So it was not the food, was the love behind the food.
Yes.
Was food for the soul.
Yes.
And then there came another turning point for me, because by that time I already had 1 year. I didn't have too much communication with my wife. So I took the risk. And when I was returning the trash cans to bring, they're bringing new food, I begin to smuggle letters inside the trash cans. Wow. I begin to write letters and send to my wife, and she received the person that, received the trash can. He took a photo, he sent it to my wife and a WhatsApp. She printed out the letter, she wrote a letter and sent me back a new letter. So now we begin to have communication through letters.
Wow.
So we did that during almost 3 years. And I compiled around 1,000 letters.
Oh my.
Those 1,000 letters, Anali, became my book. My book is based on those letters.
Oh.
So my book is based on the memoir I accounted during those years. That became my book. So From Hero to Villain is based on those letters. So when I came back, I found that Mervis had compiled those letters. She had put it in a Word document, and I began to work with her, and we edited, and it became to be the book.
Wow.
So the book has that sense that it came through the food.
Yes.
Because the food, I could have my hope infused because now it's a food for my soul.
Yes.
That I had the opportunity to begin to communicate with my wife.
Now I definitely connect and understand more the fact that what kept you going and alive was these letters.
Yeah.
And also the food, because what it meant to you was the love that was behind it, the time that your family invested in you.
Yeah.
And how much they had poured and hoping and praying that you would be able to come back home. That's what I see, how I feel, like I picture it. What is vulnerability? Sharing your real feelings important for healing?
Well, vulnerability is important because, and this is something that, by the way, I when I do my coaching, this part very important that the person has to be vulnerable when they're sharing their story.
Yes.
Because when you're in a leadership position and you really open your heart and you show your vulnerable side, no matter what you have gone in life, but you show your heart, that makes a great connection. That's where a leader connect with their team. The great leader are those that have the ability to have that great connection with their team. When you are vulnerable, when you say, I don't have all the answers, I need your help. When you have that openness, is where the leaders connect. So this is something that, it came from my story, but today I use it in part of my teaching and my speaking, that a vulnerability is something very important. The people tend to think that it's showing that you're weak. And the contrary is a superpower. When you show your heart and you show that you don't have all the answers.
Yes, and that you're willing to continue growing and learning. They're going to actually be able to connect with you at a very different level.
Correct.
And see the human side of
Correct.
Your heart,
Correct.
Who you truly are. Correct. So, as we know, what would you tell someone who feels completely alone in their own pain as they're passing life and they're dealing with so much pain?
Well, this is important because one of the things I always tell the people, that never do things alone. One of the things that we discovered that we didn't only have the support of our family, we began to have the support of the six of us. Because remember, now we are six guys together, that we found that we had a lot of things in commonality.
Mm-hmm.
We had a lot of good families behind us. There was not a guy that had three divorces and a guy that was single. We were six guys with long-term marriage, with kids and grandkids that were waiting for us. So that created a great bond.
Yes.
So now we are supporting each other. We are cheering each other. And this is something also that I tell today to everybody that is hearing this in a leadership position. Never do things alone. If you are going to any situation, look for help. Look for a circle of support. Look for the people that love you. In our case, was the love of our family and the support of the team. So that really kept us alive.
Yes, and most definitely. And I think that it meant a lot to you to know that all of you, even though you came from different backgrounds, there was a lot of similarities,
mm-hmm.
and you were all willing to work together
Correct.
And find the way to support each other. You were in a very situation, a very isolated situation, and you only had your team, your group of people, your families at home and that love for the food, love for the kitchen that kept you on going on those meals that you received.
And let me tell you, for us, I remember that now we're talking about the food. The food began to be a part essential of our survival. I remember, for example, when there were coming times like Thanksgiving or Christmas, we stayed 5 years. So we went through several Thanksgiving, several Christmas, several birthdays that we missed, but our family always were trying to give us that help, that support. So, for example, I remember Thanksgiving, all the six family bringing us Thanksgiving food. It became a feast for us. So we really were enjoying, even if we were in that dark moment, we were enjoying that our family was giving that love through the food they were supplying to us.
Were you able to know when it was Thanksgiving and when it was Christmas and all those dates, even though you had lost the time?
By that time, yes, because remember that the first time was the first year. After we got the second year, the negotiation was already ongoing, so the situation began to change for us. By that time, we already had books. I had a small radio. I have a watch already, so I have the time. So the situation after the second year began to evolve. Now we're having those food, because remember that after the intervention of the UN, they did a big pressure to change the situation, because they told these guys, if you continue treating this guy this way, they're going to die. We were going to die.
Oh, okay. Well, definitely, it has touched me to know more about your life and your story I would have never imagined, which I definitely have to get myself going on reading and knowing more about your story. Well, coming up next, we dive into suffering can be transformed into strength and how your hardest story might become someone else's source of hope. Please stay with us as we continue brainstorming and knowing more between isolation, journaling, or quiet reflection, close up. It's important to know what he has gone through, but not only that, to know that even in the midst of pain and suffering, you could change the outcome of your life, right? So maybe there's a little something that we still have a little bit of time that you would like this audience to say with the segment.
Well, as I mentioned, in any walk of life, in any situation in life, having the ability to stick with the hope is important. Mm-hmm. Never lose hope, no matter what situation you're going in your life. We want to talk a little bit more about that.
Yes, well, we're going to be coming back and we're going to talk a little bit more about all those topics that are very important, but obviously how that joins in with the love for the kitchen as well. Please stay here. Welcome back to Cook and Conquer as we transition into these next steps of how to make this delicious recipe. We shift from strength to gratitude, a spiritual anchor many people lose in the rush of life. For Jose, gratitude became a lifeline after years of captivity, and today he helps others rediscover it in their everyday routines. In a noisy, demanding world, gratitude often fades into the background. Many viewers may feel disconnected from joy, overwhelmed by stress, or numbed to the blessings around them. This segment offers a pathway back. So after regaining your freedom, what simple everyday things brought you the most gratitude, Jose?
Well, it's a very good question, because one of the things that I learned during all those years of captivity is that you need to express gratitude. I remember, Anneli, I'm going to say this short word, that when we were released in October 1st, 2022, we landed here in a military base in San Antonio, Texas, Army Brooks. And I remember we stayed there in a program, a decompression program that was the same program that they used for the missing in action and the prisoner of war. So we stayed 2 weeks there. And after almost 1 week, my wife, they told her to come and be with me. And they took us to have a gathering in the night. You know, we went to a chill out with militaries, and you know, there was a rock band and some food. And I remember that the captain of the program, he came to me and said, "Are you enjoying the night, Jose?" And I remember that I turned my eyes to the sky and I began to see the stars. And I realized that was the first time I saw the stars in 5 years. So in that moment, I said, "Wow, God, how beautiful are the stars." You don't realize how important it is that you express gratitude even in the small things in life. Today, for me, walking in the morning, going with my dogs, and expressing gratitude is important. And let me tell you something, Annalie. This is something that even neuroscience has confirmed, that when you express gratitude, there's all the chemic in your brain infuses in your body the dopamine. So it creates a state in your body and in your soul and in your heart that makes the things change. So expressing gratitude is something that everybody has to do in a daily basis, even for small things in life.
Yes. How did you begin reconnecting with the small joys of life after facing such extreme conditions?
Well, exactly what I'm saying, because, for example, today in the morning when I woke up and I grab a cup of coffee, walk my dogs, and go to the backyard with them and see the fresh air and see all the breeze, today I enjoy it. There are things that in the past I didn't enjoy. But when you lose everything, it begins to be part of your life. So today, in a daily basis, and this is a recommendation to anybody that's hearing this, no matter what you're going in your life, never, never have the way that not express gratitude. You need to express gratitude no matter what you're going in your life.
How can slow, intentional moments in the kitchen help people remember what truly matters?
Because the cooking, the food, the smell of the food, I'm enjoying the smelling of this food. It is, as I said, when I was in captivity, I discovered that every time I was receiving the food, it was not food for my body, it was food for my soul. So the cooking is that. The food is part of the connection. When you are cooking something that you enjoy, it brings you memories. It brings up those moments that you have. For example, when you talk in your book about the legacy with your mother. So that is the connection the food makes.
It sure does. So what does gratitude become even more important after hardship?
Well, when you understand that you went through any situation in life and for some reason God operated and made a miracle, and you are grateful and you express gratitude, that makes a great connection with you and with God when you express gratitude.
Yes, and we should do that more often, I believe.
Yes.
Being from the heart, really feeling the need of saying, thank you, Lord, that you're very thankful and grateful for having a roof, for having something to eat,
yeah,
for being healthy, for being alive. There's so many reasons why we should be thankful and grateful every day. What daily habits help people stay thankful even during stressful times?
As I mentioned, in the morning, the first thing that you had to do when you wake up is say, thanks God that I'm alive, that I'm breathing. Because today, when I'm breathing, maybe somebody didn't make it. Maybe somebody's in the hospital. So you have to be grateful that you are alive. That simple thing is important to be grateful.
That's very true. I'm about to share this recipe and the ingredients we are going to be needing. And of course, I have Jose here with us, and he will be joining us as we go with each and one of the ingredients. So first of all, you're going to be needing your tortillas. And I tend to always use olive oil instead of using regular oil because it's healthier. So I normally just go and pass it through the pan and on both sides till it becomes softened, but not so loose, where I'm actually placing it back on the same plate and make sure I take all that extra oil that we don't need for the enchiladas. So that's the first step. But on the side, I always tend to have my chicken, and I go and I shred it after it's fully cooked, which it tastes and it smells so, so, so good. This is a recipe that I came up with myself. So after that, I go ahead and I saute the chicken, and I add some tomato sauce to it, chunks actually of diced tomato, and I go and I place it on the stove and I saute the chicken, the onion, and a little bit of the tomato dices, and I start sauteing that for a couple of minutes. You don't have to have it darkened. I don't like my chicken to be darkened, but it's up to you. So after I do that for a couple of minutes, which the tomato is really good, the smell, really good. Right? Yeah. So after that, I saute that, and I have the chicken and the tortillas there. So I'm starting to roll all that together. And as they're rolling, I put that on a big plate. Maybe it could be a glass plate. And I start putting a lot of cheese. You could use mozzarella, shredded cheese. You could use cheddar and a mix on the top layer. And after that comes out, what I tend to do is you could put all the enchiladas on this glass. That's a special container that could go in the oven for a couple of minutes till you see everything melted on the top. Or you could do something easier, that when you have the enchiladas, you just go and put it on a, one of these nice plates that's actually for the microwave, and you just go and warm your enchiladas there. But after that, you have to come up with adding a whole, you have to cover it with lettuce, your enchiladas, a layer of lettuce, a layer again of tomatoes on the top that you put on top of your enchiladas. And then after that, you come back. If you want to add a little bit more of cheese, you're welcome to do so. Then I love to have the spiciness, which not everyone likes the spicy. I just like it more like a decoration to put on the plate around the enchiladas. Then I actually go and start cutting slices of avocado that I also put on top of my enchiladas on a different layer on the top, you know? Mm-hmm. Then after I'm done with that, of course, I have to add some delicious sour cream. Mm. Who doesn't love the sour cream?
Yummy.
On the top of the enchiladas? And then the last part that I do is I go and, of course, I come from parents that are from Mexico, so of course we have to have the spicy, the kick to it. Not everyone likes it, but it helps with the flavors just a little bit, just to try it, to know. So you don't have to have a lot of it. So that's how I do my enchiladas, but they come out so delicious because it's not just an enchilada. It has layers on the top.
Wow.
So it has lettuce, it has tomatoes, it has sour cream, it has avocados, chunks of avocado, and cheese. And it, when you're cutting it, all the cheese comes out. So it's like really delicious because it's melted. And then you just go ahead and you add some salsa. Oh my goodness. I feel like I'm already hungry myself.
I'm already hungry.
So that's how we're feeling. Like we want to start having our meal and having our plate, which they come out so nicely done and fabulously. They look really nice. They're very, I love the color because it has red, it has green, it has very nicely colorful ingredients. But even your onion, you could actually use red, purple onion instead of just using white, because it makes the color stand out and also the flavors as well. I bet you're hungry yourself.
Oh, I'm really hungry. Let's start this with this.
Yes, okay, most definitely. So thank you, and I hope you make this a delicious plate as we continue with the next segment. Don't move from there. Thank you for being here. We'll be right back. Thank you for staying here with us once again, as we just had this delicious meal that I got to enjoy with Jose Pereira, and very happy and honored to have him here today with us. As we know more about his story, Jose Pereira, the founder of Angels Helping on Earth, as you know, what he went through is very meaningful and impactful, and we will be sharing more about this because we want to hear it from him, what this really means. Don't miss a second of this show or any of your Now Media TV favorites, streaming live and on demand whenever and wherever you want. Grab the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and enjoy instant access to our lineup of bilingual programs in both English and Spanish. Prefer podcasts? Listen to Cook and Conquer anytime on the Now Media TV website as you go to www.nowmedia.tv. Covering business, breaking news, lifestyle, culture, and a lot more, Now Media TV is available 24/7, so the stories you care about are always within reach. Welcome back to our final segment of Cook and Conquer. This is where we go deep into legacy, purpose, and the call every person carries within them. Jose's story is one of profound transformation, and now he uses his life to uplift others through Angels Helping on Earth. Today, we explore how someone becomes the hope they once prayed for. Many viewers feel a calling, but don't know where to begin. Others wonder if their story matters at all. This segment uncovers how purpose is born not from perfection, but from pain, compassion, and courage. Jose, your foundation, Angels Helping on Earth, was born from a divine revelation during your third year of captivity. Why was sharing that moment and that mission the first step in building a legacy of hope?
Well, let me introduce the why this came, because after all those years, one of the things that was important beside the hope for us was the faith. So we begin to every day have more faith through the prayer, the reading of the Bible, and we got that connection, and we really begin to feel that we were protected by God. So now, after we had all our daily prayers that we did in the night, I remember one day I decided to, you know, finalize in the prayer. I went to my bed. We had a bunk bed, okay? So I was in the lower part of the bed, and I went to my bed, and I was sleeping in peace, Anneli. Really, I was at that moment in a peaceful moment. And in the middle of the night, I had a dream. I remember I had a dream that, you know, I saw God coming to me, and I saw that he was like showing me the future. And I began to visit, and I saw a building where when I came, I saw part of my family there working in that area. And there had several classrooms, and I saw people in those classrooms, and I saw two TV studios, no one, two. And my daughter working in one of them, and I doing interviews in another one. And I saw my second son, working there, his wife. I saw all this scene. And he showed me that that was going to be a foundation, and the name was going to be Angels Helping on Earth. I'm Jose Angel. Wow. Okay? And by that time, I was already written letters with my wife. So I remember I woke up, and I wrote down everything I saw. And I did an org chart, and I sent it to my wife. When she received the letter, she thought that I was going crazy. And I said, why these guys? You know, no. When I came back, I saw that org chart, and Anneli, after those 3 years that have been here, I begin to see all the things that begin to happen. They begin to happen. Happen at that point that I and now I have my show, and I saw the TV studios. And I begin to do the classes because I'm doing master classes. And so many things that I saw in that dream, I begin to see how it began to happen.
Wow.
So what I needed to conclude to close the cycle was creating the foundation. So that's why I decided to create Angels Sampling Earth. But going more, when I got connected here with my church, that is a Hispanic church in Houston, I begin to see a lot of needs, a lot of need in the immigrants. And now with all this issue that are here in this country with the immigrants, I said, oh God, this is what you wanted me to do. You wanted me. So it has been like a revelation. So that's why I decided to do not only create the foundation, it's going to be my passion and my legacy for the future. I believe that final goal of what I went through, anything that happened in my life, and that process that I went, that I didn't understand what I went through, is because of the foundation. The foundation is going to be the main goal of my life. And let me tell you, the other day happened something that it kind of blew my mind, because I was preparing some brochures to begin to promote the foundation. And my grandson was around, and he saw me, you know, folding the brochure, and he told me, hey, abuelo, what is that? I said, oh, this is I showed him the brochure. This is the brochure of the foundation that your abuelo is creating. He saw that, and I began to explain to him what the foundation was about. He was like a surprise. And I told him, joking with him, Martin, this is going to be your foundation. You're going to be the president of this foundation in 3 years. And he got like a, he saw like the compromise, and he began to cry.
Oh.
He began to cry, and I saw that he really took it seriously.
Yes, he felt overwhelmed.
He felt overwhelmed. And I, in that moment, I said, this is the legacy. Here is where the legacy comes. When you do something that is going to be beyond. So I see that foundation going big in the future. I don't know where it's going to be in 30 years, but I hope I'll be alive to see it going big in 30 years.
Well, I'm. It's very revealing what you're sharing right now and where it's going and what God is going to do, and that you want to bring your family aboard and be participating in this.
They're going to be part of it.
And the need that there is, you know, in our community. I'm not saying that there isn't in other cultures or communities, but I truly believe that it needs to happen. There's a lot of people, like you said, there's a lot of need in our culture, and there needs to be breakthrough.
I'm working today with a pastor that I connected with him. I'm going to say here, the pastor Willie Peterson, he's a pastor in Florida. He has a group called the Kingdom Fundraiser. He's the person that has been helping me organize everything. I have 1 year we're working with him. And I got connected with his pastor. He was doing a master class online, and I came because I was with the idea to the creation of the foundation. And I saw that guy, and I sent a message to him saying, Pastor, I want to talk with you. So we did a Zoom call. And I remember that when he told me what I wanted, he said, well, I'm in the midst of creating a foundation, but I want to work with you. And he told me, why you want to work with me? And I said, because God told me to work with you. And he said, oh, if God told it, I had to work with you. And he has 1 year working with him. So the other day he was telling me that, he said, Jose, I had 37 years working in this. And during all these times, I have never seen somebody so much passion with what they're doing. But today there are many people that want to help the immigrant. They don't know how to channelize the help. You're going to be the vessel. So that's what I'm feeling today. That my foundation become the vessel to channelize that help.
Which it doesn't seem like it's happening, you know, in this early on, you know, as this new president, it's caused so much conflict. And I think that there's so much to bring to this country, and the Hispanic community has so much to offer.
A lot.
And I believe that there has to be change. Of course, there's those people that come to this country that cause conflict, that have done horrendous things. Which, no, I think that's a privilege to be here. And if you've done everything right and you've worked very hard, then there should be an opportunity, because this country is a country of opportunities. Those that have done harm, in my personal feeling and opinion, is that they shouldn't be here. those that have raped women, those that have done bad things, not everyone could fall in the same place. Not everyone could stay Correct. Here. And we have to be fair, right? There's people that shouldn't stay here. So you've said that when you walked out of captivity, you carried a promise to help others rise again. How does turning your darkest chapter into a mission help future generations understand resilience and courage?
Well, talking about the foundation, one of the pillars of the foundation is going to be having help for trauma recovery. One of the big issues in the immigrants is that when you come here to this country, many people are coming already with traumas.
Yes.
You're running from, well, you went to that. So you're escaping from a situation that you went through in your country. So you come here with trauma.
Yes.
And you don't have time to recover. You have to keep moving on. So part of the pillar of the foundation is help people. I'm working with my personal therapist going to partner with me. So she's going to be helping me in organizing a one-on-one sessions, therapy sessions to help people for trauma recovery. Another thing you said, that people that should not be here, but people that want to be here, courses like English as a second language.
Yes.
Citizenship, embracing the American culture, that the people can get involved and connected with this wonderful country. This is the type of thing that my foundation are going to take care of. And of course, there are going to be another thing like logistical support, financial literacy, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes. Okay. Well, as you've shared this, how could people actually find you? Where could they look you up, and how could they support your cause?
Okay. The foundation, the webpage is angelsin.earth. Angelsin.earth. If you go there, you will see all what I'm talking today with more details. That appears my vision, my mission, and the way they can donate. Because the way we're doing right now is creating the foundation, doing a fundraiser, because we're working hard to launch it in this early January in Houston. We're going to do your inauguration party. I'm going to invite you to be there. Oh. And see this like my legacy for my life.
Most definitely, I want to go and I will be part of it. And definitely, I want to support you because I also have that heart. Being Hispanic, I care about wherever you come from, but we all speak the same language. Mm-hmm. We're all connected. And I hope that you continue watching my episodes as we continue growing this Cooking and Conquer show. And I'm Annalee Vineyard. It was a pleasure and a blessing to be here with you today. Thank you.